I wasn't sure I was going to get out a new episode this week. I got kind of discouraged, feeling down about the music part of this crazy poddle project I'm doing. I have visions what I want it to sound like, but I don't have the musical ability or technological skills to make it happen. So yesterday I just sort of gave up. But today, I had required conferences with some of my students. One young man, who wants to be a nurse, talked about taking difficult core classes like anatomy and physiology, along with two English classes, and working, and keeping his girlfriend's children on track with online schoolwork while she's at work. Another student works at a nearby hospital. She was tired because she had just gotten home while her husband was leaving to go to work. He works at a hospital too, second shift. She told me how she had COVID-19 a couple of months ago. She just received her second vaccine and the side effects have hit her hard. She'd been told that might happen. You know, she still has gotten her work in on time and makes it to every online session that she can. Neither student has complained or offered any excuses. They just keep on going. I listened and felt ashamed. If they can persevere, then so can I. That's why after work, I went back to the drawing board and finished this episode. It's not what I envisioned, but it's from my heart. A heart that is thankful for the opportunity to teach these amazing people that I call my students. This episode is dedicated to them. The Dog Hobble Trio did this gig every year, but none of them liked it very much. They preferred rock versions of the folk songs from their homelands. But Dr. Dagg had paid the gnome well to do barbershop quartet. He loved barbershop quartet. So the trio did it, and Dagg always asked for this song. Ben the Boojum held a cigar in his hand for effect. When he began to sing, it was okay. Not great, not bad. There was no accompaniment. They were, after all, a barbershop quartet, one short.
Full insurance benefits, extended paid vacation, golden parachute. On-site daycare for 12-hour shifts. Well, you know, dear girl, you must learn to pay the rent. But they'll fill your head with that silly nonsense. No BS, no BA, just a waste of pay. Take the easy way.
All the more.
Settle down and get a job, get a job. Get a job. Get a job.
Applause for the Dog Hobble Trio was deafening. Who didn't like a song about subjugating all your dreams and aspirations to get a measly paycheck? That's right. Clap! Dr. Dagg straightened his tie and came back on stage, joining in the applause. How about those dog hobble boys? Or boy Benjamin Gnome? Oh, they clapped harder. He clapped harder. They clapped harder. This was getting ridiculous. He started nervously laughing, opening his hands wide and lowering them to try and quell the crowd. They loved barbershop trios, it seemed. Finally, the crowd began to settle down. What would be next? Dr. Dagg couldn't stop himself. Oh, those guys, they're great, aren't they? The crowd started clapping again. They're great, but we've got more. Dr. Dagg had enough. That's enough. The crowd fell silent. Next, Dr. Dagg looked over at Mrs. Sabowski, who was holding up a poster board with, what was that written on it? He knew he had to invest in that expensive teleprompter. He'd use the student activity fee money. They wouldn't miss it. Oh, wait a minute. He already thought about that once or twice. We have for your entertainment and enlightenment our very own winning, not one, not two, but three regional Glee Club championships for schools with incredibly mythologically diverse student bodies. Our very own, he squinted at the poster board. He would buy the more expensive, bigger screen, he thought. But Mrs. Sabowski was bound to whine about the student activity fund being bone dry. Applied multi-purposers. Applied multi-purposers. Wow, that's a mouthful. With their top 10 hit, Him to STEM. Silently, the Glee Club came out in choir robes of blue and silver, their palms pressed together. They just kept on coming and coming. There must have been 100 of them. Dr. Dagg had asked Mrs. Sabowski why there were so many, and she had said, "Don't you remember?" Mrs. Hollifield complained that her boy Corey had auditioned for the Applied Multipurposers and hadn't gotten in. She felt that the whole thing was rigged and that her vampire son was being discriminated against. Dr. Dagg didn't see her point. So? Mrs. Sabowski continued. So you did what you always do. Which is? Cave to avoid any confrontation with the parent, especially a very rich parent who gives large donations to the college. Dr. Dagg pursed his lips. Okay. Now I remember. But now Mrs. Sabowski was on a roll and wanted to let it all out. So, you said that anyone who wanted to join the group could join the group, especially if his initials were CH the third. No matter how much of a tin ear that person had, or how stuck up he was, or how much he made inappropriate remarks to the chancellor's secretary that if Mr. Sabowski ever knew about, would squeeze that brat of a vampire's throat until his eyes popped. Whose eyes? Corey's or Mr. Sabowski's? Oh, you know what I mean. So the group finally filed onto the risers, only after a little bit of difficulty, getting a few of the already inebriated group members up onto the top tier without falling off. It seems as if the Glee Club had a tailgate party during the advising and registration part of the day. When they were finally in place, the moon-eyed girl with her blue eyes and melancholy flat face came to the central microphone. Oh, so you don't know about the moon-eyed people? Let me tell you. The Cherokee believe that long before they lived in the Smoky Mountains, there was a race of small, bearded white men who owned all the land from Tennessee to Kentucky. The men, living in round log cabins, had huge blue eyes and pale skin. They were creatures of the night, sun-blind during the day and only coming out at night to do what others do by day: hunt, fish, build, and even on occasion wage war. No one is sure why the Cherokee began calling them the moon-eyed people. Perhaps it was that they were nocturnal, or perhaps because their faces were flat and round like the moon they lived by. There are many legends about how they came to live in the mountains. Some say, like dwarfs, they sprang from the ground. Others that they were aliens who visited Earth in its prehistoric days. Still others believe they were descendants of a small group of Welshmen who came to America long before the Spanish and settled in the Smoky Mountains around 1170. Many people believe the Moon-Eyed people abandoned their round homes and moved west to seek better fortune. But we in Blue Ridge County know that they, just like the Eastern Band Cherokee, are still very much alive and well. They've just learned where they are welcome and feel safe. In the Cherokee County Historical Museum, not too far from Dog Hobble, there stands a soapstone statue of two of the Moon-Eyed people, twins. The statue was found in the early 1800s where the valley meets the Hiawassee River, standing 37 inches tall and weighing 300 pounds. It is a crude likeness, but accurate. Everyone has their own opinion about the statue, says the woman who runs the museum. The statue depicts twins, but they're short like the Moon-Eyed people with little round flat faces. Some believe that the statue represents the two rivers, and others believe it is a man and a woman. When the archaeologists came and looked at the statue, they said they'd never seen anything to compare to it, says the docent. One reason is because they are standing, not sitting or kneeling. They think it might even be pre-Cherokee. It's a nice statue, but not nearly as beautiful as the painting of the famous twins Carrie and Derry that hangs in the Dog Hobble Art Museum, curated by the campus's own Dr. Horn, a veteran history teacher and expert on Appalachian lore. Derry, Dr. Horn tells me, is Welsh for oak, and Carrie, a form of Cairo, which means love. But I digress. Back to the story. The Moon-Eyed girl's name is Abigail. You probably won't see her again in the book, but then again, I may not be finished with this book. Anything goes. She stood there, with her big lamp-like eyes gazing over the crowd. Like most of her kind, she was small and sun-blind. Even with her specially designed dark glasses, standing there in the sun was agony to her. But she had been a member of the Glee Club for 5 years and always sang on Club Rush Advising Registration Day. Yes, I know it's a 2-year college, but not everyone makes it through in 2 years, some because they aren't ready, some because they find the benefits of being in school far, far outweigh the disadvantages of being an adult, especially if one is a moon-eyed person like Abigail. Moon-eyed people are mythical. They don't thrive in the real world very well. But why did she continue to sing with the Glee Club in the hot, blinding August sun? Well, I'll tell you. It was love. Yes, love for the choir master, Toby Zauberputzen. She knew he was a vampire, knew that he didn't even know her name, knew that he looked over her head to peer at the elf Cindy Sprinkles, whose father, Danny Sprinkles, was supervisor of the doll line at the toy factory, knew that Toby was bosom buddies with Cody Hollifield III. She didn't care. Toby wasn't like him. Actually, he was a lot like him, but she didn't care. She loved him. That was all that mattered. And he did know one thing. He knew that she was a moon-eyed person and could sing. So she sang whenever he asked her to, even in the hot August sun that blinded her. He had given her some words to say, and since she was sun blind, she had to memorize them. She was terrified, but Toby had asked her. Yes, she knew he asked her to speak and sing because the glee club was made up almost exclusively of vampires and other pasty white creatures, so they needed a bit of diversity to quell the increasing number of politically correct idiots. And at least she had large, very large blue eyes and pasty white skin, of course, so none of the people who really counted to Toby could object too much. Abigail knew that, okay? She didn't care. He was at the podium, ready to direct the glee club, flashing his huge white smile to everyone except her, holding up the baton, running the other hand through his longish black hair. He nodded without looking at her to signal her to come forward, and she did. She stepped up to the mic. It only screeched a little. Jim and the other audio tech geeks were getting used to the new equipment now. One thing about Jim, you remember Jim, the sound guy. He was a fast learner. Abigail said under her breath, "For you, Toby." She touched the mic. She took her hand away. She touched it, took it away, touched, took. "Get on with it," Toby said through gritted teeth. She got on with it. "For you, Toby." She breathed one more time. "Hello, fellow Blue Ridgebacks," she began, as she had been told. "Here are the Blue Ridgebacks. Our eyes are blue and our backs are ridges?" Did she get that right? "We are here to sing that all-time favorite of yours that you voted in the student services, our favorite Blue Ridgeback Glee Club favorite song poll for the fourth year running. That song that sings praises to the most difficult." She raised one hand as she was told. "Most lucrative." She took her hand off the mic and raised it in the air. "Most impressive." She looked at her two hands and realized that there was not another hand to raise and had not been told by the beloved Toby what to do at this point, so she stopped, only for a moment, and raised both of her arms way above her head. "Most impressive subjects taught at this college. Science." Everyone cheered. "Technology." Everyone cheered louder. "Engineering." She had to hold for a few minutes because the cheering was so loud. "And math." The cheering stopped like a dog that had reached the end of his chain. Undaunted, Abigail went on as directed. "Here are your silver and blue ridgebacks singing Hymn to STEM." Abigail looked to Toby as the crowd continued to cheer for a full 30 seconds. He was beaming at her. Then the crowd settled and he nodded. I had big plans for this number. It was going to sound like a choir. It was going to start out with the moon-eyed girl, Abigail, singing in this beautiful little voice, and then it was going to be a big huge choir, but that is just not meant to be. What you will hear is Abigail singing at the beginning. You'll just have to imagine the choir joining in, and then Toby will sing, and then the choir will join in again. So put on your imagination caps and just imagine it, what it will be once I am able to make it what I want it to be. Here we go. Abigail began to sing with her little voice. that sounded so otherworldly, because she was ethereal, too beautiful for this mediocre college campus in the middle of nowhere, in the middle of Appalachia, the forgotten America. She closed her moon eyes against the blinding sun and sang for Toby, or thought she did. But looking on that day, I chose not to believe that. I chose to believe that she was singing for herself, for her people, for the two rivers that converge at the spot where her ancestors first hunted, fished, and built a civilization by the light of the Appalachian moon. I chose to believe that someday she would sing not for the Blue Ridgebacks, or for Toby, or for Stem, but for them.
I was walking through the world, I had no purpose, just didn't see the point of that stupid course. In art appreciation or speech communication, I was lost, but now I'm found. Science, technology, engineering, and math walk with us down the path of enlightenment. Meaningful, lucrative work, it's the only perk for spending hours in class. All we need is science, technology, engineering, and math. It's STEM, you're all we need. There are no gods before thee. Yes, STEM, your own creed. We'll gladly get down on our knees and worship your STEM, oh STEM. Yes, STEM, your own need. No gods there are before thee. Yes, STEM, your own creed. We'll gladly get down on our knees and worship your STEM, oh STEM.
English history and art, English history, music and art, they no longer have a part in our religion, in our decisions. It was a good place to start in the old days, but these are new days. There's no point to see, to study ethics and philosophy. Let's face the facts, all we need is science, technology, engineering, and math.
Yes, STEM, you're all we need. There are no gods before thee. STEM, you're all we creed. We'll gladly get down on our knees and worship your STEM, oh STEM.
As they ended with a flourish, Toby and Abigail looked at each other, although Abigail, the sun blindness and all, couldn't see Toby, but could imagine him looking lovingly into her eyes. Actually, he had closed his eyes because his people had said that looking into a moon-eyed girl's eyes would turn you to stone. Yet, he was strangely drawn to them. But he could never, no, he would never. Corey would make sure he was the laughingstock of all of campus. But he remembered that they were sort of a milky blue that was just so, so something. He opened his eyes and really looked at her for the first time. It was kind of crazy. He knew, sacrilegious even, just after singing the hymn to Stem, but suddenly he had a deep longing to take his new Saturn 2900 XM53-1000 smartphone and take a picture of Abigail. Then he could go to the rarely used exercise room in his parents' house where he had his art supplies and paint those eyes so he could look into their blue depths whenever he wanted and no one would laugh at him or think him a fool. Thank you for listening to this episode of Campus, a novel that wants to be a musical. This episode was brought to you by Angela Cantola and Don Wallace. Anchor, the easiest way to make a podcast. Audacity, free open source cross-platform audio software. Hannah Winkler, technical assistant. And John Winkler, my wonderful husband. The songs Get a Job and Hymn to Stem were written and performed by Katie Winkler. Hope you'll come back and hear another episode.